ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
There's a moment in the 90s movie Men in Black where Tommy Lee Jones tells Will Smith that if they're going to find the aliens they're looking for, they're going to have to consult the reputable newspapers. And so they pick up some copies of The Scandal Rag, The National Enquirer, and its black and white sister paper, The Weekly World News. The Weekly World News is now defunct, but at its peak, it sold upwards of 1.2 million copies per issue. It ran important stories with headlines blasted across its front page, like "Termites Eat the Eiffel Tower," "174 Mile Per Hour Sneeze Blows Off Woman's Hair," "Alien in Slammer After Fist Fight with Bill Clinton Over Hillary," and my personal favourite, "Man is All Thumbs," with a picture of a man who has no fingers, only thumbs. Today, Jack the Insider makes a welcome return to Conversations to make sense of all of this. Jack Oisted is a true crime writer and a columnist for The Australian, and he's the co-author of The Fine Cotton Fiasco. Today, Jack's here with the story behind these stories, how and why the Weekly World News was founded by a former officer of the CIA, and how, in its dying gasp, it passed on the baton of the almost true, half true, and completely silly to the internet. Welcome back, Jack.
A pleasure to be here, Richard.
Jack, you're wearing a T-shirt with the front page of the Weekly World News issue, and I'm just going to read some of the headlines I can see on your T-shirt. The big, bold headline is "Beach Party Terror. Deadly Manfish Emerges from the Ocean to Attack Partygoers."
Yes.
"Stay Away from the Beach" in bold italics. Then below that, "Underwater City Confirmed." I mean, there's a lot of information
on
that front page.
There's a lot going on there, Richard, in a whole mess of fonts, starbursts, sashes top and bottom. This is a front cover that's screaming to be taken off the newsstand and read.
And it was.
It was too. Indeed, yes.
It's one of the most popular journals in the United States in its heyday. This story of the Weekly World News is for you, it's a love story, isn't it?
It's a love story. It's literary Dadaism. Essentially disinformation. When disinformation was silliness for the sake of silliness. And that's why I grew to love it. Look, I looked at some of the techniques that they were using because I was involved in magazine publishing myself. And I thought, well, if they can be this silly and get away with it, so can we. And so at the bottom sash of this front cover is the word, "I'll never be the same." And it's something that I used on numerous occasions in other magazines, because it fits everywhere. I'll never be the same. I'll never be the same as I was before I walked into this studio, Richard. It's something you can use on every occasion. I'll never be the same.
They ought to bring it back, like "Pole Shock for Albanese."
I'll never be the same. It just works everywhere.
What kind of writers worked at the Weekly World News in its heyday, Jack?
These were highly skilled writers. I mean, some of them have been pulled from the New York Times, Philadelphia Inquirer, not the National Enquirer, the Philadelphia Inquirer. So these were highly skilled journalists who were having a bit of a break, and their brief from their editor was just make things up. But don't just make things up, make it extraordinary, make it unbelievable, and make it funny.
What were some of its ongoing obsessions? Stories, you know?
Aliens, creatures from the deep. Mermaids was another particular fascination. Creatures from planet Earth and beyond. But there were also sort of a political bent. It was an apolitical paper. It didn't have a right or left wing bias, but it did mock politicians from both sides, actually. Newt Gingrich, the Republican House Majority Leader, was ruthlessly mocked, as was Bill Clinton and often Hillary. One of the headlines you mentioned there was that both Bill and an alien had been locked up after a punch-up, and there's just this great photos of Bill Clinton and the alien both sporting black eyes.
It was obsessed with the Bible too. There were often Bible stories, like apple found from the Garden of Eden, that kind of thing.
Garden of Eden was found, and the original apple was found as well. You'd think it'd be a little bit desiccated given the time, but no, there it was, just with a couple of bite marks out of it.
Pizza was found at the Last Supper, apparently.
Pizza
too.
Was served at the Last Supper. That's the other thing we got to learn. And Jesus would return to earth, but we didn't really notice. It wasn't really widely reported in the mainstream media.
That's right, in the mainstream media.
Yeah, that's right, in the volume of lies from the mainstream media. But Weekly World News reported that Jesus had come back to earth,
yes,
gathered some followers, and the rest of us were left to eternal damnation.
That was the headline, "The Second Coming Came and Went," yes, wasn't it? So that means right, that if Jesus had come and gone, the rest of us were going to be subject to the tribulations.
The rapture had come when we had missed it. We had blinked and missed it, and we were doomed for eternal damnation.
How about Jimmy Hoffa, the Teamsters Jimmy leader Hoffa, and a gangster? He was an obsession as well, wasn't he? Because his body was never found.
That's right. Of course, Jimmy Hoffa's body was found by the Weekly World News in Elvis Presley's grave. But Elvis wasn't there because Elvis was all over the place. There were so many Elvis Presley sightings, and Weekly World News drove that. You might remember it was a sort of American fascination, and we'd look at them and go, look, Elvis Presley died on the toilet, you guys. I mean, we all know this. But it was all driven by Weekly World News, who finally sort of admitted that Elvis Presley was, in fact, still alive and working in a 7-Eleven in Pennsylvania.
When I was living in the UK in the 1990s, I used to buy on a Sunday this similar magazine that was called The Sunday Sport.
Mm.
And it had headlines on it like World War II bomber found on the moon.
Mm.
And then a week later, the headline would be, it's gone.
It's gone.
And they had proof.
Yeah, that's right.
They had a picture of the moon's surface and there was no bomber on it at all.
So scientists concerned, Richard. Scientists concerned.
But there was something, I have to admit, there was something beguiling about that, to see this nonsense.
Mm.
But in the format of a proper newspaper,
yes,
on the stands, with this absolute nonsense in it, the Weekly World News had its slogan as America's most reliable newspaper.
Yes, and would discredit mainstream media as well. This was the only news that you needed to read.
But there was 1% of me
that wanted to believe it.
That, or thought, can it in any way? Is there a kernel of truth here? It's much the same way when I saw my first mockumentary, which was Spinal Tap, which was clearly not real. But a part of me was thinking, is this real?
Yes. Trailer Park Boys from Canada was one of mine too. And I'm looking, are these guys real? And, of course, it became obvious the more you watched it that it wasn't. And this is the trick of Weekly World News. It was magnificently imaginative fiction dressed up as news.
Tell me about some of your favourite headlines.
Well, I think my favourite one is Baby Born with Tattoo, which wasn't a front-page story. This was inside, probably page 7, and just a 200-word story, Baby Born with Tattoo. And the first question you've got to ask is not how. I mean, forget how. Why? Why are you reporting on this? And the story, it's just a brief 200 words, would just explain the no, it was no birthmark. It was a tattoo. And you know what it said, Richard?
No.
Mother.
I should have known that. No, I was thinking a sailor's anchor. No, mother. Okay. There are always amazing discoveries being unveiled.
Amazing discoveries.
Like, amazing discovery. Rome was built in a day.
Yeah, they knocked out the Colosseum and just kept working. Got the concreters out and just did it all in a day. Amazing discovery. Scientists explain. They weren't concerned. They were just explaining how this happened, how we got to Rome being built in one single 24-hour period. You know, this is the early period of wellness, and they got stuck into those sorts of things too. So this is the early period where people were sort of rejecting medical science and going for supplements and wellness things. And they come up with these sorts of things. Sleep in a tub of lard and look 20 years younger. Key to long life, porridge, whiskey and cigarettes. I don't know about the porridge, but the other stuff then sort of sounds right. Lose 70 pounds in 15 days. With flesh-eating bacteria. Get yourself some flesh-eating bacteria. Fantastic weight loss program.
Prove I lie.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, prove it. Sleeping in a tub of lard will not make you look 20 years younger. Lard, of course, is a wonderful universal panacea, of course.
The thing I like about the Weekly World News, that's so different from the poisonous untruths circulated on the internet is that it's not mean-spirited. It's kind of in love with the whole weirdness and surrealness of it all, except when it came to the French.
That's right.
What kind of
really
headlines?
It was vile and racist when it came to the French. Vengeful frogs eat French chefs' legs was one. They really didn't like the French. And you might think, oh, this might have something to do with the Iraq War. Do you remember the...
How French fries became freedom fries?
Freedom fries. Yes. And all that. But it actually predates this.
Really?
It predates the Iraq War. So they were just into the French all the time. Another one was sissy French kids trade cards of female impersonated. I mean, again, I have to ask why.
So unlike normal American kids who trade baseball cards, the French are trading cards of female impersonators.
Emery was a real collectible.
So they had these stock phrases on the cover, as you say, I'll never be the same. Scientists concerned was another one after...
Experts agree.
Right. Were they ever named, these experts?
No, never. Occasionally you'd see a scientist was, you know, completely fabricated and he'd belong to some university that didn't exist. But for the most part, it was just experts and scientists.
How difficult was it to get a story published in the Weekly World News? Well, I mean, because these have to be carefully written. They actually have kind of a weird high standard for the low bar of journalism here.
Well, these are highly skilled writers. So... It was open to freelancers, but extremely difficult to break in. There's a piece on the web written by a guy who was very proud to have been freelanced into Weekly World News on 6 occasions, despite having 40 cracks. So he didn't get very far, and he went on to become the editor-in-chief of Esquire magazine. So it was not easy.
It's like the New Yorker... But without the fact-checking.
Yeah, that's no need for fact-checking.
But it required a certain kind of vibrancy of imagination, though, to write for this sort of thing.
And it's really, really difficult to do. I mean, one of the things that you would learn writing magazines of this kind is that you can easily write 1,000 words on the topic, but you can't. You just don't have that space. So you've got to compress 1,000 into 200, and that's a real skill. It's something that took me a long time to learn.
Tell me about the man who founded the Weekly World News, Jack.
Well, it's his real name, but as you'd expect, it's a colourful name. It's Generoso Pope II, or Junior, I think he preferred the name. And he had a fascinating background. As you mentioned in the intro, he was in the CIA briefly, I think, spent a year there. He graduated from MIT in engineering, I think.
Just let me add this point. Lest we think a guy like that is too wacky for the CIA, this is in the post-war era when they were going to give Castro an exploding cigar to blow up his face.
Something like 238 attempts on Castro's life.
They were going to give him some chemical that would make his beard fall out, which would humiliate him and make him feel unmasculine.
He was a scuba diver, Castro. So they put something that would cause a terrible rash and also make him lose his facial hair, which... according to the CIA, would completely humiliate him amongst his Latin American followers.
And they were giving people LSD. They were doing trials of LSD to try and use it as a truth serum, I thought was a wacky conspiracy theory, but turned out to be utterly true.
It turned out to be true.
Completely true.
It turned out to be true.
So that's the CIA this guy's working in for a year,
that's
is it?
Right.
Okay.
And perhaps I'd like to think that he was considered too wacky for the CIA. So off he went. I believe his father had a printing press. The Weekly World News was linked to National Enquirer. It was in the same offices in Miami, in Florida. And there was a black and white press that was just sitting idle as National Enquirer moved into colour print. And so that's why Generoso Pope II decided to run Weekly World News as a newspaper, just simply black and white.
Now, the National Enquirer was a nasty mag, and it focused on celebrity gossip, and it was quite poisonous like that. Mm. How did Weekly World News, which was supposed to be just a black and white version of that, evolve into something altogether much, much sillier and weirder and funnier?
It started as a celebrity tattle thing, and it wasn't terribly successful. You've got to be in colour if you want to have made-up stories about celebrities. So Generoso Pope employed a fellow by the name of Eddie Klontz. Now, Eddie Klontz had no pedigree in newspapers. He was a high school dropout from North Carolina who'd acted as a copy boy in a number of local sort of regional newspapers in the United States. But between the two of them, there was this incredible chemistry. And after the sort of failed enterprise around celebrity tattle, it was decided that we're just going to go crazy. There will be no limits. Forget about fact-checking. Forget about having sources for your stories. Just sit down in front of a typewriter in those days and just hammer out a story that's imaginative, creative, funny, and totally fabricated.
I wonder how much of this plugged into America's apocalyptic imagination, because this is also appearing at the same time you've got that book, The Late Great Planet Earth, being printed, which predicts that, as per the Book of Revelation, the apocalypse is going to be upon the world in 1975 or something
So
that came and went. And I think there is a kind of a large audience of Americans in particular who are looking out for signs and wonders. And along comes the Weekly World News and offers them an image of the creature from the Black Lagoon emerging on a beach Miami or Long Island somewhere.
Away from the beach. So they did veer into this apocalyptic thing. I mean, what today we would consider the MAGA crew as well. They used to ruthlessly mock, you know, they would just refer to them as slack-jawed yokels and rednecks and so forth. So it was really sort of self-satirising of, I guess, what would they perceived to be their readership, but probably wasn't. Their readership would have been a little bit higher up the intellectual scale.
We've talked about aliens. Aliens seem to be an ongoing feature, and it's gone so far beyond the idea that there are aliens out there in the universe. That's just a done deal.
Yeah.
And they're not only in the universe, they're here on Earth. They're showing up all the time and all over the place. Give me some of your favourite alien headlines from the Weekly World News.
This wasn't just a UFO sighting story, some bullet in the sky, some light filmed and grainy black and white.
Boring.
Aliens were among us. 20 US senators were aliens, according to them. And if you've ever seen Newt Gingrich, you'd go, yeah, maybe. Ted Cruz, he could be. Strip that man down, there's bound to be some tentacles come out somewhere.
But what was his position on aliens?
Very pro-alien. Aliens were doing a lot of good in this country. Like I say, Bill Clinton and an alien had a punch-up, and Hillary had to go and bail them both out of the slammer.
What kind of close connections did they report the aliens had with the Clintons, Bill and Hillary?
Hillary actually adopted an alien baby. That meant that the White House had to renovate, which is kind of timely right now with Trump's renovations and extensions to the White House. But in those days, they had to build an alien nursery for Hillary Clinton's alien baby.
Sorry. Don't you mean Hillary Clinton's love child?
No. It was
alien love child, I mean.
Well, possibly.
Because I believe she and the alien weren't actually married, were they? They hadn't been bonded in wedlock, but they were having an affair.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I don't know about true. It's what Steve Colbert calls truthiness.
Truthiness.
It was truthiness. Yes.
Who was this alien she was having an affair with? Did he have a name?
His name was P'Lod. So I suppose it's P'Lod. It's one of those things you read and go, gee, I wonder how you pronounce that.
And what did he look like? Did he look like a Close Encounters of the Third Kind type alien?
He was of that kind. He was more E.T. than alien,
right.
You know, than aliens with the fearsome jaws and bite your head off and all that sort of stuff.
Right, he had sort of like tentacled fingers and was a
bit of an E.T., sharp head, all that sort of stuff. You have to remember that they were using a lot of images that they would use sort of 1950s schlock horror movies like The Creature of the Black Lagoon, and then they'd just Photoshop it up to look a little bit different, and away they'd go.
But they had a real gift for adding the extra salacious detail, because the headline wasn't just she was having an affair. The headline was Hillary Clinton love affair with P'Lod, an alien with a foot-long tongue.
Foot-long tongue. Perhaps we'll leave that there. But it's important to remember that this is just simply context. It wasn't that they were attacking the Clintons. You know, this was Bill Clinton's two-term presidency. And with all the scandals around Monica Lewinsky and so forth, they just hyped it up.
The thing I like about P'Lod as well, or P'Lod or whatever his name is, was that he was always ready to speak on the record.
That's right.
Unlike unlike a lot of weasel, informants, he was ready to, nail his colours to the mast, so to speak.
And he would offer advice. He would offer advice that was in the best interests of humankind, but also the best interests of the universe and the galaxy.
So you mentioned the fight there, but were the Clintons able to sustain good relations with the aliens? Because they did endorse Clinton in 1992, I believe.
Yes, the aliens did. I think that was 92. But by the time 96 came around, Richard, the aliens had dropped off. It's rather funny because nowadays, in US presidential elections, and really things have taken a rather drastic turn there, we've got virtually everybody in the United States who's offering an endorsement of one presidential candidate or another. You might remember Joe Rogan and Theo Von, whoever that is. I endorse Donald Trump as president. You go, well, who cares? I mean, you're barely flat out scratching away on a ballot there.
Yeah, but if an alien does it, that's a big deal. I would put to you.
Yeah, because, I'm a space race and all this sort of stuff. This was in the best interests of the galaxy.
So when the Monica Lewinsky scandal came out, how badly did the Clintons fall out with Pilot and his fellow aliens?
Well, on a Weekly World News cover story, Richard, that screamed, female space alien accuses President Clinton of sexual misconduct. Washington, D.C., a shapely female alien, accused U.S. President Bill Clinton of groping her breasts, and the bizarre incident nearly sparked an interstellar war.
And meanwhile, another alien was getting off with Hillary Clinton, and hence the headline, Space Alien Tells All in Shocking New Book, My Steamy Nights with Hillary in UFO Love Nest.
UFO Love Nest. Oh, God, Love Nest is just a beautifully colourful term used by tabloids around the world.
Yeah, but it was took the Weekly World News to connect that Love Nest to UFO, though, I think. I don't think that had been done before.
And provide sex tips for having a Congress with aliens.
What kind of sex tips?
Pilot's sex tips are an innovative and adventurous combination of the best love strategies from Earth and space designed, he says, to help all beings get the most from any love session, anytime, anywhere, just as the Earth Woman and I did. Hillary was just described as Earth Woman.
The First Lady of the United States, Earth Woman. Okay. Okay, what are some of the tips?
Forget about going all the way. In fact, ban it for at least an hour, which is a very, very, very wise thing to do. This will shift your focus to the kind of kissing, cuddling and bonding that Hillary and I engaged in, says Pilot.
Now, for some reason, Hillary Clinton has been the subject of all kinds of conspiracy theories. There was a man called David Icke, a former sportscaster and football player in the UK, who came forward and alleged that Hillary Clinton was, in fact, a 14-foot space lizard. Now, I interviewed Hillary Clinton after her defeat in the 2016 election, Donald Trump, and I met her in person, and she wasn't 14-foot, Jack, and she wasn't lizardy at all. She was actually, I would use the term, petite.
Well, Icke believes that lizards had come from beyond Jupiter, where they'd sort of established a base, and they had infiltrated into the world. The Pope's a lizard, Hillary Clinton, as you say, the royals, lizards, all lizards. And they are, in fact, scaly with tails and probably reproduced by bearing eggs. But you can't see it. This is the Icke theory, that you can't see it. This sort of magic occurs that you actually do have some sort of half-sized T-Rex wandering down through the Vatican, but no one can see it.
So would that mean that the fact that I saw a petite woman in her 60s at the time I interviewed Hillary Clinton, that's my fault?
It's a form of hypnosis. So I believe that's the Icke theory, Richard.
Now, he has a website, David Icke. Reads a lot like the Weekly World News now.
It's like he's been going through back issues, yeah.
Has Something Big is Coming and It Involves UFOs. Another one is How the Human Body is a Software Program. Now, I see a connection between people like David Icke and other people who are sort of arguing very interesting things out in the fringe there, like Naomi Wolf. Mm. They're people who start out on the left, the very progressive left, and they've come out and said something a bit silly. They've copped a bollocking for it. They're humiliated by that. And then they pop up saying all kinds of interesting things.
Russell Brand, I guess, is another example. A person who was, I guess, some sort of libertine, I guess he really didn't achieve very much other than just being omnipresent on television and radio in the UK. But, of course, once the revelations about his sexual misconduct, alleged, were made, he assumed the sort of look and feel of Christ himself and became born again. I mean, there's a well-trodden path between the left and the right. As we get older, it is said that we get mortgages and we start tilting towards conservative politics. But these guys go from one extreme to the other, almost in a heartbeat.
Now, we talked about aliens. Bigfoot was another big obsession with these things. Jack, I just wonder where Bigfoot comes from as a story. Like, I think the only evidence that's ever been found for Bigfoot is that very grainy black and white footage of a bloke in a gorilla suit in the distance.
Just looks back briefly and then trots back into the forest again. Always grainy footage. UFOs, always. I mean, look, in this day and age, you'd think, get some colour into it. You've got a phone. It's a camera.
A high-res camera.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll just set it to grainy black and white footage and film that alien or Bigfoot.
What were some of the headlines they ran around Bigfoot, Jack?
Bigfoot kept lumberjack as love slave.
That lumberjack wouldn't have liked that much.
No.
Or maybe he did. Who knows? Maybe I'm being a bit close-minded.
That's
here.
Right. Yeah, okay. Exactly. I mean, who are we to say?
Who are we to say?
Who are we to judge?
All right.
Bigfoot hooker poses nude for centerfold. I got this headline, but and of course, Weekly World News would never do centerfold, but there apparently was some sort of Playboy-ish type centerfold that Bigfoot's hooker posed for.
Now, you have a personal connection to this stuff. You and your colleague, Pat Shiel, were inspired to start a similar mag in Australia to the Weekly World News called Scoop. What kind of a mag was Scoop in its time, Jack? We're talking the 90s here, are we? Is this right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, late 90s, I suppose. I mean, the publisher probably should have seen the internet coming and kept his money in his wallet, but he didn't. God love him. So that was when I hooked up with Pat Shiel. And he'd worked in a number of these type blue-collar mags, and the Scoop was one of those that decided to take a bit of a Weekly World News approach because, look, it's cheap. It's a lot cheaper than actually doing reporting. It's just sitting in front of a computer and hammering out a good yarn if you have the imagination to do it.
It's cheap, but it's difficult, isn't it? Because you've got to be talented
to do it.
Yeah, and you don't spend a bit of shoe leather investigating any damn thing, do you?
That's right.
You're not ringing up people saying, can you confirm? But you've got to have the ability to think up the stories in the first place.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So a lot of it was image-driven. So we might have an image of, there was a story I remember quite well of a dolphin that had stolen someone's wallet at Monkey Mia. So we...
How did the dolphin steal... Like, that dolphin fin's an imprecise instrument, I think. Maybe it's beak or something, I don't know.
Well, the evolution of the article was probably we had some images that were quite cheap of dolphins at Monkey Mia, and we would have read a one-column 30-word piece about someone who'd lost or had claimed his wallet was stolen by a dolphin. So we basically just besmirched the names of all dolphins everywhere as a sort of thieves and vagabonds at Monkey Mia.
Well, I think you were wise to alert the world to this because I think if dolphins are developing opposable thumbs, we're in big trouble.
That's right. We are in big trouble. They are much smarter than us.
Much smarter and much nicer people than we are.
They are.
We
yes,
are too. What kind of competitions did you run in Scoop magazine?
Well, when we started, it was obviously a blue-collar magazine, and the prize will tell you, will sort of confirm this, that we were giving away a ute and a ton of beer. And that was, you know, how we ran the magazine, the first edition.
So it was a ute with a ton of beer in the ute,
Ton of beer.
Right.
And it's one of those things, I guess, in hindsight, we probably should have researched a little bit better. But, look, I got on the phone and through a friend of a friend, I spoke to a marketing director at one of the major breweries, and 2 days later, a pallet of beer arrived at our offices, and for free. I mean, it was all sort of promotional and things like that. So our art director, Sean Hill, decided if Jack Hoisted can summon beer by the hundredweight, delivered to your door for free, he figured that I must be one of the most powerful men in Australia.
And more than that, you're a magic man, because in that space where the pallet landed before, there was no beer. Then one day there was beer. So that's almost an act of magic on your part, isn't it?
It drew gasps when it arrived. But what we hadn't done, we hadn't researched this. We had all their permits in place to give away the ute. And we thought the beer too. But it turns out in many jurisdictions in Australia, you can't give very much beer away, let alone a ton of it. In the NT, I think you can't give grog away at all.
Right.
And probably for very good reason.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden we had the lawyers saying, no, you can't give away a ton of beer.
So you'd promised you'd give away a ton of beer.
We did.
But then the law said that would actually be illegal.
We can't do that. So we had in our offices this pallet of beer that just sort of sat there for about, sort of dwindling slowly away. There was a lot of drinking in this office. And when our art director would rip open a carton and take the top off one of the bottles inside, he'd go, another winner.
And as you watched this mountain of beer slowly dwindle to nothing, were you filled with a sense of melancholy and pointlessness, I wonder?
It was like watching concrete set. You needed sort of time lapse. It wasn't the most popular of beers. It took you about 3 months to get through a ton of beer.
You keep referring to it as a blue-collar men's man.
Yeah.
But was it?
Well, not really. It turned out a biggest readership, you could actually determine where your most sales came from, which newsstand, which news agency. And it turned out that ours was the newsstand near the Australian Stock Exchange. So major audience there were stockbrokers.
So these somewhat chemically adult floor brokers on the Stock Exchange would rush out.
Chalkies and what have you, yeah.
Would rush out for hard days, buy, sell, and pick up a copy of Scoop. What kind of headlines were you running at that point?
Let's take the occasion of the Monkey Mia one, where we referred to a flipper as a sort of generic dolphin, and we made some very, very harsh character assessments of Flipper on the cover and inside the magazine. So presumably these guys have been looking at economic forecasts and this sort of stuff all the time. And by the time it came to lunch hour, they were saying, let's have a beer and look at this dreadful magazine.
What kind of man did you have on staff writing for Scoop magazine back in the day?
They were sort of an eclectic group. I remember we had one guy who was a New Zealander and he could just thump out work, you know, 3 or 4 yarns a day. I mean, you've got to understand, writing a weekly magazine, it's a lot of work, right? You know, you've got to fill, let's say, 150 pages, a lot of it advertising, but the rest of it needed to be thumped out. So our New Zealand friend, he was very, very prolific. But then, of course, like most Kiwis, he disappeared to travel Europe and elsewhere. We also had a bass player. He was with some sort of country and western band. And he was a very talented writer too, but just perhaps missing a little bit in terms of work ethic. He'd sort of shuffle into the office when he did turn up at around midday. And there were times when I had to, you know, pull him up and sort of issue the formal warning as much as you could in a place like that. And he said, yeah, mate, yeah. And the following day, he didn't turn up and sent an email to me saying, can't come in today, mate. My housemate's cat is sick. He had some fantastic excuses. And in the end, I couldn't do anything about it. He was very good, very talented writer too. And, of course, we had the wonderful Ignatius Jones. Ignatius Jones was our personal advisor, sex advisor.
Ignatius was giving sex advice?
Sex advice column. And, look, I'll let you into a little secret, and your listeners too, of course. When you see the phrase name and address withheld by request, that generally means it's made up. And Ignatius would delight in making these stories up.
Your colleague Pat Scheel worked for that magazine, or was he the editor or something?
He was editor, yeah. And then he left, and then I became editor, and of course Pat had been, and Iggy too, had been at Picture and People. Pat was the creator of Climbing Mount Druitt Without Oxygen, where you actually had the late Dave Morgan, a great photographer, filming this guy, crampons on, sort of belly crawling up the Great Western Highway.
I recall a headline he wrote where he got a tarago full of marijuana, I think, and drove it down to the coastal town of Bargo. So the headline was
Bargo, cargo, tarago, farago. Yeah. So this was Pat's thinking. Headline first and
write the story backwards,
make it up around that. Yeah.
While you were writing for Scoop, did you make contact with your heroes at the Weekly World News?
We did. And we wanted to write a yarn about them. And so we wrote to them in Florida, in Miami. That's where their offices were, in some dusty little corner of the National Enquirer. And they wrote back to us, and they were very kind and gentle. And we did write the odd article about them, but mainly we used them as a model because they were so sort of contrived and they were so funny. We really wanted to follow that model. The art guys would jump up and down whenever you say, now I want a starburst there, I want a sash up there, I want the sash at the bottom saying, I'll never be the same, and in different fonts. If you actually ask for a graphic artist to say, mate, can you give me 12 different fonts on the one page, they'll go, oh, God, no, you know, this is not what I learned at school.
We go from the realm of the absolutely nonsensical, like mermaid found in tin of tuna, to the half-true. And I think some of that culture of the half-true Weekly World News made its way to the NT News in Darwin, which,
yeah,
you know, ran famous stories like, they stole my dog while I was on the bog.
Yeah. Why I stuck a cracker up my clacker. I think it was their golden enterprise there.
You see, that's not implausible.
No, well, it was cracker night.
It was cracker night.
Cracker night in Darwin.
The one I have more trouble with is Croc's arm discovered in human mouth on Darwin Beach. Maybe that's true, maybe it's not.
Yeah, weird. That's a late night headline for
that,
sure.
That is. The Weekly World News ran a half-true story about something called Hogzilla once. Tell me about this.
Enormous hog. Enormous. I mean, Hogzilla was a giant wild pig that would sort of gore people around Georgia, in the backwoods of Georgia.
And how big was this said to be?
12 feet long and weighed over 1,000 pounds, 450 kilograms in the new, 3.7 metres long. Bite your face off, Richard.
But it was real. There was a Nat Geo channel actually had this monster exhumed.
Yeah.
And it wasn't too far. Well, it wasn't 12 feet long, but it was 6.9 feet.
Yes, still a large unit.
Still a very large unit and gigantic, and its tusks measured nearly 71 centimetres.
Yeah. So that was, I guess, the element of truth to this story, and maybe it's hard to know. It's a chicken and egg dilemma, isn't it? Whether the Weekly World News made this up and subsequently a pig of similar size was found, or whether they worked off the little rumours about Hogzilla and employed it as a yarn before the beast was found.
Well, it makes me wonder if the headline you've got on your T-shirt, Beach Party Terror of a Giant Manfish Stalking a beach in the United States, might have just been a bloke in scuba gear getting out of the water. So yeah, there might have been some element of reality to it, I wonder.
People were screaming in this photo, Richard. So, you know, there was terror. There was terror on the beach.
Okay. So Bigfoot as this kind of strange creature in the wild, that was one thing. It didn't get them that far.
No.
But then they racked it up. They sort of went to next level with another creation, a creature called Bat Boy. Who was Bat Boy, Jack?
Bat Boy was a half boy, half bat, found in a cave, I think in Arizona from memory. But the delightful thing about Bat Boy is that it became a sort of cult. It created a sort of cult following on its own. But when you write a story with a cover that screams, Bat Boy found, and that was in June 1994, if I remember correctly.
What does Bat Boy look like, by the way? Can you describe what he looks like?
He looks like a boy and a bat.
Right.
He's got a sort of vampiric look to him.
Like Nosferatu, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and again, we're looking at this kind of 1950s schlock horror movie type image that's been photoshopped. So, well, the first time we saw Bat Boy, he's got his mouth agape, and that's because he's somewhat displeased that he's been captured.
All right.
By October, we have the next headline about Bat Boy. Bat Boy escapes. If he's found, then of course he escapes. And the Bat Boy escapes thing led to these kind of conspiratorial things that the government hadn't really been following him closely enough. And now we had this Bat Boy on the loose.
Off the loose.
Yeah.
Right.
That could cause all sorts of mayhem around the continental United States.
They listed at one issue, they actually listed the members of Bat Boy's family.
Yes.
Who were they?
Well, there was Herbert Sr. Susan Boy was the mother. Susan Boy. So it's Bat Boy,
of
course.
So Boy was his surname then?
Yes.
Right, okay.
Well, they tried to
and
get
who
that.
Else was there?
And Ruth Carter Cash Boy. Ruth Carter Cash is...
Named after the beloved wife of Johnny Cash.
Yes, indeed. So...
sorry, just to be clear, Bat Boy had a sister called Ruth Carter Cash Boy.
That's right. That's right. and from presumably loved country and western music, did Bat Boy.
And so how did the story... So Bat Boy found in Cave.
Yes. And then he goes on a road trip with Herbert Senior, Susan Boy and Ruth Carter Cash Boy. And while he's being hunted by officials who negligently had allowed him to escape. You see how this works for magazine writers of this kind? You write one story and the sequel writes itself.
Okay. It's the government screwed up again, has it, by not keeping tabs on that. Okay. What further adventures of Bat Boy did they report on? Because I don't think you can stop there once you've got Bat Boy found, Bat Boy escapes, Bat Boy captured, or what? What happened?
Being probed by scientists, Bat Boy became a cartoon in the Weekly World News, and after becoming bored at the prospect of becoming the US president, post-Clinton, took a ride across the continental US with his family, including Ruth Carter Cash Boy.
And eventually, wasn't there a musical made about Bat Boy that played in Broadway?
Yeah, there was an off-Broadway musical.
Oh, of course.
And librettists Keith Farley and Brian Fleming and songwriter Lawrence O'Keefe collaborated on Bat Boy the Musical. It was actually well-reviewed and it was one of those things. It became a bit of a cult thing. This is throughout the 90s. And it must be remembered, this is pre-internet. It's before the internet is soaked into our consciousness as it would perhaps 10 years later.
What were the songs like?
Hold me, Bat Boy. Touch me, Bat Boy. Help me through the night.
I'll never be the same.
I'll never be the same. That's quite right.
The Weekly World News ran a regular column by a man who called himself Ed Anger.
Ed Anger.
Who was this man?
Well, he was a complete creation of Eddie Klontz. Eddie Klontz would write this sort of rabid column. I mean, he would often end his column by saying, I'm going to load my shotgun. He hated whales with a passion. Anything environmental. He wanted to concrete the Amazon. He was, I guess, the archetype of what we see now in right-wing columnists around the United States and indeed around the world. And if you took some of Ed Anger's columns and read them now in perhaps an Ann Coulter, with an Ann Coulter byline or one of those sort of scribblers, you'd think, yeah, this was, they probably learned from Ed Anger, which was obviously taking the mickey, but became almost like the archetype for all angertainment.
So Drill Baby Drill, that sort of starts with Ed Anger wanting to concrete the Amazon.
Hates foreigners, hates immigrants, yoga, or speed limits, hated speed limits, and pineapple on pizza. He really hated that.
What did he like, though? What were his likes?
Flogging, electrocutions, and beer. He loved beer. He wrote a book called Let's Pave the Stupid Rainforest and Give School Teachers Stun Guns and Other Ways to Save America. It was published in 1996. And you take that headline, that could easily be real in 2026.
It could. Why did he hate whales so much?
Because I guess whales were the sort of image of Greenpeace and the green environmental movement. Anyway, so he hated whales. He considered them bludgers, bludging off the taxpayers' hard-earned.
Weekly World News was big on world history or American history, revisionist history. They had the scoop on American history. What kind of stories did they run along those lines, Jack?
President Lincoln, Abraham Lincoln, arguably the greatest US president, was actually a woman. And the headline was, Abe was a babe.
That's...
And they came up with proof, or what they considered to be proof, John Fitzgerald Kennedy to come in and talk to them in a seance. But as he didn't reply, the headline was JFK proven alive.
Because he didn't show up at his seance?
There was no response, so therefore he was not among the dead. He was living.
In its prime, as I said, the Weekly World News sold millions of copies. It's no longer with us. What happened to the Weekly World News, Jack?
Well, like the scoop, the internet killed it. All of a sudden, you could find weird and wonderful stories, true and untrue, misinformation, disinformation. We're talking about the rise of the internet pre-social media, but social media was starting to come, which became its own font of disinformation. and sometimes crude and awful stuff. And the other thing, because the Scoop, unlike Weekly World News, because the Scoop was a sort of lad's mag, we were just completely overwhelmed by this tsunami of pornography that came from the internet. People wouldn't buy a magazine that would cost them a couple of bucks because they could find all this stuff and much, much worse on the net.
And these kind of stories, this disinformation stories that are circulated on the web, they're different. Weekly World News wasn't mean. It wasn't mean.
No.
It pretended to be mean occasionally, but it was so silly you couldn't possibly take it seriously.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. And it had imagination and wit and all those kind of things. Mm. It's different now, isn't it?
Well, you mentioned it before, but you actually look at the rise of disinformation. Let's call Weekly World News misinformation and reveling in it and acknowledging it really backhandedly. But when you get to things that are going on the internet now, there is an absolute attempt to manipulate minds and thoughts. I did a podcast a while back with a number of people, and the theme of the show was, why does my yoga instructor want to talk about the Jews? And this is part of the problem that we have, that if you are gullible enough to believe that, let's say, modern medicine is your enemy, then you are susceptible enough to be manipulated to a particular ugly political philosophy like Nazism.
I've known a lot of people who disdained newspapers like the Weekly World News back in the day because it clearly was so, well, sort of salacious but silly, and at the same time, there was a lot of scolding and tut-tutting around it, and also of the people who were going to believe its stories. But human beings today are no different than the medieval human beings. We're not constructed any differently. We're still models of pattern recognition who see, well, this plus this might mean this. Like dolphin, wallet missing,
yeah.
Dolphin stole it.
Flipper is a bastard.
Yeah. Flipper is a bastard, right. But that's what we are as human beings. We haven't changed really as human beings since the Middle Age.
Look, I could mount an argument that says the Weekly World News was the peak of Western civilization, only to be overwhelmed by the internet that has rendered us all a little bit dumber by the day.
Jack, it's been a great pleasure having this conversation with you about this important journalistic phenomenon. Thank you so much.
I'll never be the same, Richard.
Podcast, broadcast, and online. You're listening to Conversations with Richard Feidler. Find out more about the Conversations podcast. Just head to abc.net.au/conversations.
Today's conversation with Jack Hoisted was made on the lands of the Gadigal people. The producer was Alice Moldovan. Executive producer is Nicola Harrison. I'm Richard Feidler. Thanks for listening.